Welcome back to the National Defense. It's Randy Miller. And, you know, we'd love to introduce you to these great organizations that are doing some great things around the country. And we've discovered another one, the United States War Dogs Association. It's a nonprofit of former and current U.S. military dog handlers and supporting members committed to promoting the long history of the military service dogs, establishing permanent war dog memorials, and educating the public about the invaluable service of these canines to our country. And Chris Willingham, the president, joins us here. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. It's great to find out about you guys. And you've been around since, established in 2000?
Yes, sir, that's correct. It was established in 2000 by five Vietnam dog handlers. And they didn't serve together. They represented three branches of service, but they had the same passion for holding that leash and being a dog handler. And they didn't really start having reunions until the 90s for Vietnam era dog handlers. And that's where they met. And they wanted to do something special to kind of honor the war dogs of the past while also being there to support the ones who are currently serving. And that was in 2000. And then the next year, 9/11 happens. And then my generation of dog handlers started deploying. So they kind of switched their mission and started it to supporting us and sending care packages downrange. So I've been on the receiving end of support from U.S. War Dogs for a long time. And Ron Aiello, who was one of the first Marine scout dog handlers to serve in Vietnam, became a big mentor of mine, a big friend of mine. And he, a couple years ago, asked me to take over the organization, and I couldn't be more proud to be part of it.
Yeah, it's fantastic, Chris. And talk a little bit about military dogs and why they're so important.
Well, we've used dogs in the military since World War II. And they've used a variety of capabilities. We've kind of developed our capabilities based off the threats you're facing and which war or conflict you're in. And they've just proven time and time again to be a true force multiplier and a fully mission capable asset to where if you have boots on the ground, that dog has a purpose. And they had a variety of jobs, but when it came down to it, it's about saving lives. They say that it was a common saying that the Vietnam War would have had another 10,000 names if it wasn't for war dogs serving over in Vietnam. Mm. And so it's just to be a part of that. And then you look at Iraq, Afghanistan, where we serve, the number one threat to coalition forces was IEDs, improvised explosive devices.
Right.
And they had a joint task force. It was called a JIDO, Joint IED Defeat Organization. And their whole job was to find the best way to counter the IED threat. And over 6 years and $19 billion, they cannot beat the capabilities of a well-trained military working dog. So it kind of speaks to what they bring to the fight.
Yeah, you know, and as a guy who just has a huge passion and a heart for dogs in particular, we've got a couple of pit bull rescues. And, the people that are not introduced to dogs or don't have dogs, it's hard for them to understand, I think, sometimes just how not only smart, but how caring these dogs are. And we've talked to a lot of veterans on the show that had canine partners that, have tried to get them back to the States with them. And it just, they form that lifelong bond, don't they?
Absolutely. I think that there's a common saying that, dog training starts with obedience. That's the foundation for all dog training and dog success as a team. But more important than that is that rapport and that bond between the dog and handler. And when you get that synergy and you click and you kind of can tell what the dog needs before he asks or his behavior dictates, or he can tell what you're asking for him before, like it's just that clear nonverbal communication because of the bond you have. And my dog, I think an important secondary mission we had overseas in between patrols was just to be a comfort, just to be there.
Sure.
To bring a piece of home to a bad place when we had rough days. And it was incredible just to see the spirits being lifted up by having one of our canine companions over there with us. But that bond is absolutely lifelong. And I owe my life to my dog. Like there's no doubt about it. Only reason I made it home to my family was because of my military dog. And so you can't thank them enough. You just try to keep them spoiled during their well-deserved retirement.
Absolutely. We're talking to Chris Willingham here in the National Defense. He's the president of U.S. War Dogs Association. You can find them at uswardogs.org. And Chris, talk a little bit about your dog. What kind of dog do you have?
So I have my military working dog. I adopted her out. Her name was Luca. And she was pretty special. So she had two tours to Iraq, one tour to Afghanistan. And she ended up losing a leg in Afghanistan, but she served 400 patrols and no one was injured when she was walking point.
Wow.
And she became a true ambassador to the K-9 program. And she lived until almost 13 years old in retirement. She just passed away a couple years ago. And now we have a yellow lab named Murray who came from a Gold Star family. So Luca and I served with another dog team, Corey Weens and his dog Cooper. And unfortunately, they were killed on one of our patrols. And I've kept in touch with his dad. And he wanted to raise yellow labs in honor of his son. Cooper was a yellow lab. And so the dog that we have now came from that Gold Star family. And we named him Murray because that was a patrol base Corey and I set up in Iraq. So that dog is not a military dog, but he's very special to us having that connection with the Corey Weens family.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Murray, what a great name. That's cool. And I know you guys, you talked a little bit about it before, about shipping care packages downrange. You've shipped, in 21 years, you've shipped over 30,000 care packages to dog handlers serving overseas, and you're supporting over 1,000 retired military working dogs through your prescription program. What's that all about?
Yes, sir. So it's basically after over the last probably 14 years, U.S. War Dogs has turned into a life cycle of practical support. So, you know, while they're active duty, we send the care packages. When a dog retires, we have a military working dog service medal. And the biggest part is our RX program. So the Robbie Law was established in 2000. That allows dog handlers to adopt their dog when they're done with their service. But there's no public funding to help cover those veterinary expenses. And that's kind of where we step in. And I think the mindset is if we're taking care of the dog, we're taking care of the veteran on the other end of the leash, because again, they're going to do whatever they have to take care of that dog. And if we can alleviate that financial burden, we're going to be helping out the dog team. And so we cover the prescription medications. We help cover down on emergency surgeries. I think we did over $30,000 worth of emergency surgeries last year alone. And that program is just brand new from last year. So we're just now starting to expand some of our care we're providing for these dogs. So it's anything we can do to help you just give the dog the best retirement you can. And don't let finances be a decision maker, and let us come in and help alleviate that stress. And that's kind of the goal, because those dogs have absolutely earned it.
Man, that is great. And it's so practical and needed too. We're talking to Chris Willingham here on the National Defense from president of U.S. War Dogs Association. And I know part of your mission at the beginning of the association was to establish U.S. War Dog Association Memorial. And that was done in 2006, right?
Yes, sir. That's where it all started. And they started raising money in 2000. And then, like I said, once 9/11 kicked off, they continued to raise money. And they actually dedicated it in 2006. But at that point, I mean, they were supporting hundreds of dog teams in Iraq and Afghanistan. So that kind of grew their mission and kind of morphed in that lifetime of practical support for them. And then since then, we've dedicated a few more. Most recently, last November, we dedicated a monument down at the Navy Memorial in Washington, D.C. for John Derengdara and his canine Bart, who were attached to SEAL Team 6. We also dedicated one out in the Women's Military Memorial just outside of Arlington that's dedicated to all female dog handlers. You know, there's not been one that's dedicated to all female dog handlers. Huh. We wanted to represent them. So it's special to be able to recognize you know, highlight different parts of the canine community and bring people together and just overall spread awareness and education about what our dogs have done for us.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I'm sure that's an emotional moment when you kick these things off too, huh?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. We got at the last one for the Navy Memorial, we had John's family was there and you know, they were speaking about him kind of some kind of stories as he was growing up and decisions to join the Navy to be a dog handler. And just, I think that if you're able to create environments where, you know, there's a saying like everybody dies twice, you know, once when you're buried and again, when the last time your name is spoken. So in that spirit, you just want to say their names and like just bring honor to our fallen, because the further we get away from sustained combat operations, it's more important to remember those who did pay the ultimate sacrifice. And you do that through memorials and other means, but that's just one of our ways to kind of give back and make sure we're highlighting those important sacrifices.
Sure, yeah. Chris, talk a little bit about your military service.
Well, I joined the Marine Corps in 1999 out of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and I served for 20 years, and I went to canine school in 2000 and dedicated 17 of my 20 years to the military working dog program. So from a handler up to a trainer, all the way up to running the special operations program for the Marine Corps. Had opportunity to deploy several times in the Middle East and just work with some incredible individuals throughout my time. And so this also is a way for me to just stay connected to those who are still serving and give back. So I absolutely love it. To be honest with you, it's kind of like therapy for me to still be involved with the Military Working Dog program through U.S. War Dogs.
Yeah, I could certainly see that. And being in the Marines, nobody ever made fun of your Southern accent, did they?
No, sir. I made sure of that.
Oh, that's so good. Man, this is so cool. And you guys are connected with the Hills Dog Food too, right?
We have several partnerships throughout the country who help make our mission go around. Biggest one's Pet Supermarket. I mean, they've been a huge supporter of ours for the last 7-8 years, and they do an annual fundraiser for us. And I think that's one of the things of being around for, you know, 22 years now, is we've got an incredible reputation of a genuine support for our canine community. So it's been very helpful to build some loyal supporters and just kind of help us and expand out, because that's obviously, being a nonprofit, that's the name of the game, is always making sure the funds are coming in so we can continue our important mission, and not just continue it, but expand the care we're able to give these military working dogs.
That's cool. And if you guys want to help in that mission, you can go to uswardogs.org. Chris, thank you for the time, man. Thank you for your service, and thank you for your current mission. It's really important.
I really appreciate the time, and thank you very much for allowing us to talk about U.S. War Dogs.
Absolutely. Anytime. We'll be right back here on the National Defense.